Greetings, everyone. This is Brother Bedford, and welcome to my Conversations with Black Millionaire Entrepreneurs. And you're about to hear my recorded interview with business icon, the legendary Kathy Hughes. Enjoy. This is Brother Bedford from HowToBeAblackEntrepreneur.com, and I'm extremely excited about who is joining me today in conversation. Joining me in conversation is the founder and chairperson of Radio One, Inc., the largest African-American-owned and operated broadcast company in the nation. Radio One is the first African-American company in radio history to dominate several major markets simultaneously and possesses the first woman-owned radio station to rank number one in any major market. In 1995, Radio One purchased WKYS in Washington, D.C. for $40 million. The largest transaction between two black companies in broadcasting history. In 1999, when Radio One went public, Ms. Hughes made history again by becoming the first African-American woman with a company on the stock exchange. Radio One's value is currently in excess of $2 billion. Black Enterprise named Radio One the company of the year. Fortune rated it one of the 100 best companies to work for. And Radio One is inducted into the Maryland Business Hall of Fame. And recently, Radio One entered into another venture with TV One, or starting TV One, and according to Black Enterprise, TV One in 2006 was the fastest-growing network. Her pioneering work has led Essence to name her one of the 100 who have changed the world and one of the most powerful and influential persons. Radio Inc. continues to list her as one of the 20 most influential women in radio. Ebony cites her as one of the 10 most powerful women in Black America, and I can go on and on and on with all of the business accolades and awards that she has received, but we wouldn't have time for this interview. So without further delay, I would just like to thank you, the incomparable and the matchless Miss Kathy Hughes. Thank you for joining us,
Brother
today.
Bedford. The reason the introduction is so long isn't because of my accomplishments, it's because of my age. After you live so long, it just gets longer and longer. I've been blessed by God to serve my people, and I thank you for this opportunity to share my story with your listeners.
Oh, well, thank you very much. And I know you don't have a lot of time, so we'll just get right to the questions. How did you get your start as an entrepreneur?
Well, number one, I'm third generation entrepreneur. So it's kind of in my blood. My family has always worked for themselves. My grandfather, well, I'm actually fourth generation now that I think about it, because my grandfather's family also were entrepreneurs. So when it's in your DNA, it's just a matter of time before you have to do it. For one thing, your family's kind of judgmental about you working for other people because most of them have needs in their businesses. So if you're not going to work for yourself, then you need to come over there and help them out. Okay? And so I always knew that ultimately I would work for myself. But the way it actually occurred was I had created a program called The Quiet Storm, which went on to become the number one format in the history of urban radio. Mm-hmm. And I was stolen away from Howard University, where I created this format, by a group of 36 stockholders in a company that was 15 years old and had been trying unsuccessfully the entire time of its existence and had gone through millions of dollars to get a dark signal back on the air and broadcasting. Well, I was successful in doing that for them. I got them on the air. I completely staffed the facility. I named it. I picked the format. I did everything from soup to nuts, A to Z, I did.
Wow.
And then they ran out of money. Well, I have never, thank God, had a paycheck bounce. I believe that if a person works for you, that if somebody's not going to be paid, it should be you, not them.
Right.
And so I had literally started using my retirement money to pay my staff because the company had run out of money. So I went to them and I said, you all need an infusion of capital. So they said, well, we want you to put together a proposal and go shop a loan for us. I said, well, excuse me, I'm a general manager. I'm not an owner of this company, and if I go out and secure a loan for you, which is outside my area of responsibility, I think that I should be entitled to an equity stake in your company. Well, they laughed at me. Number one, the youngest person on this board was 70 years old at this time, and
wow.
I was probably 38, 39. So to them, I was a young, arrogant whippersnapper with a lot
right.
of mouth. So they're like, well, if you know so much, they said, no, we're not sharing. We've been together for 15 years. You don't know the sacrifice we've been through. I'm like, yeah, but it wasn't productive. I'm the one that got you on the air. So one word led to another. They said, well, if you think you know so much, you need to go buy your own radio station. Well, boom, it was like a light bulb went off in my head because it dawned upon me, how stupid was I being? This group of distinguished individuals, 36 of them, thought that I had the ability to get them a loan. So if they had that level of confidence in me securing a loan, I should be able to do that for myself. I need to have more confidence in Kathy Hughes. And
right.
I thanked them, and I start putting my stuff in my briefcase, and they're like, what are you doing? I said, resigning. And so they said, why are you resigning? I said, because you just told me I need to go get myself a loan because I need to buy a radio station. And that's how I became an entrepreneur.
Wow. Wow. And that is such a wonderful
You know,
story.
I say to young entrepreneurs and young people all the time, sometimes what you think is your darkest hour is, in fact, the blessing that God has intended for you to receive, but we don't
yeah.
see it because we want something else or we're so hell-bent on doing it our way or getting what we want that we don't see what God has in store for us. But that day, I'm telling you, it was as if the heavens had opened up. I saw it crystal clearly.
Wow. That is such a wonderful story. As you were telling the story, I've, of course, read your history, and I know that there were some challenges when you went out to acquire your station. What were some of the major challenges that you faced in your beginnings?
I was black. I was female. Okay. And I was considered young.
Right.
And so nobody.
All of which you could not change.
None of which I could change. And I was in the childbearing age. I can't tell you how many male bankers said to me, oh, well, you may get pregnant. I'm like, yeah. Well, what does that have to do with you loaning me $1 million?
Right.
I had bankers spend more time, male bankers, spend more time questioning me about my personal life than I did talking to me about my business acumen. At that time, I didn't realize, and again, I say this to entrepreneurs, this is so critical. You have to have a productive working relationship with a bank. When you don't have, and most African Americans, unfortunately, do not have a close relationship with a bank. And so many of us, black preachers are the worst. On Monday morning, they put hundreds of millions of dollars collectively into these banks around the country, and then when they want to build a new anything, they got to go beg for a loan.
Mm-hmm.
All right, because they don't have relationships with the bank where they could say, wait a minute, not only am I going to take my money out of here, but I'm going to get 10 other preachers in the city to take their money out of here too. Black
right.
folks do not realize the importance, and I didn't at that time. I had no idea that more often than not, in securing financing, it's based on a relationship. It's not based on the business plan. It's not based on the dream or the vision you have. And it's not based on your credentials. In so many of these situations, it's based on a relationship that someone already has with the lending institution.
Wow. And I get that question a lot. Just this morning, a couple emails came over, and individuals are starting businesses, and that's their main question. How do I go about acquiring financing to get started or to do this or to do that?
Absolutely.
And, yeah, so the relationship has to be built.
A quick story. I had
sure.
been in business for about maybe 8 or 9 months. It was my first year. Within 90 days of me going into business, the prime went into the mid-20s, and my senior loan with Chemical Bank of New York was 2.5 points over prime. So for one of those
wow.
Quarters, my interest rate was at 28.25%. Can you imagine?
Mm-hmm.
So
wow.
anyway, long story short, I'm concerned about payroll because I'm trying to keep up with my, loan payments, and the revenue hasn't, my cash flow hasn't started to really be adequate to cover my expenses. And so I go to my bank where I had already deposited about $700,000 or $800,000 over that time period and told them that I needed a $10,000 loan, that I had a $10,000 shortfall on payroll that I was concerned about, and I needed a temporary $10,000 loan. I showed them a contract from an advertiser. I had $32,000 coming from an advertiser at that time. It just was not going to hit my account in a timely enough fashion to make certain that my payroll checks were secure, and they told me no. They would not loan me $10,000. I cannot tell you how, again, the heavens parted and light bulbs went off in my head, because I realized if I had been standing in front of that loan officer asking for $30,000 or $40,000 to buy a Mercedes-Benz, they wouldn't have blinked, okay? That I could buy any car I wanted for any amount of money I wanted, but they would not give me, a black business person, $10,000 to make certain that my payroll was secure and covered when I had a contract that showed them that I had $32,000 coming in within the next 30 days. And, again, I realized relationship. Relationship. Once I got the relationship, I love to tell this story. My lease was up on a building, and I needed to move. And a banker that I did not know, a woman named Karen Colias, who was one of my listeners to my morning show. At that time, I was doing everything, hosting the morning show, running the company. And she realized that I was very close to losing a location for my facility, because the District of Columbia, where I was located, was supposed to be making one of these small business loans available to me, and they didn't. I had gone to closing on the building I needed to move into twice, and both times they were dry closing. Nobody was there from the District of Columbia to, fund the acquisition, and I was coming dangerously close to being homeless. Long story short, she calls me up. She says, "You do not know me, but I listen to your station every morning. I listen to your show. I have researched you. I have tracked you." And she said, "You have another closing, and this will be your third. And if you don't come forth with the funding, you will lose the building you're trying to move your station to." And I said, "Yes." She said, "Well, I'll tell you what. One of my loan officers is going to be there next Tuesday. We're going to fund the property, the acquisition for you." And I said, "Okay, what time am I going to meet them then?" She said, "Oh, you're far too busy to have to meet us there. We will take care of it, and the loan application will be in the mail." I filled the loan application out 2 weeks after the property was already purchased.
Wow.
Okay. I said, "Now that's what you call a banking relationship."
That's phenomenal. That's
okay. I said, "That's a banking relationship."
Yes, it is. Wow. You know, you are such a pioneer and a trailblazer. You mentioned the quiet storm. I mean, all of us listen to that, and we don't know where that originated. How did you come up with the concept of doing the quiet storm?
When I became the general manager of Howard University Radio, WHUR, I was really excited about the opportunity, but I also was very much aware of what I needed to learn. So I approached Howard University and asked them if they would allow me a six-week sabbatical to go to the University of Chicago and take a summer course called Psychographic Programming, which they said yes, as long as they didn't have to pay for it, I could go. So I went at my own expense, and I learned about programming a radio station to fit the listener's lifestyle. This was before morning talk shows were popular. This was before talk radio stations were popular. And what I learned in that six-week class was that you can have a very successful format if you hit the right time with your audience, and you service their desire. Well, I was in Washington, D.C., and Washington, D.C. has always been notorious for this overpopulation of women professionals who were basically manless and dateless on Friday nights. So the Quiet Storm started off as a Friday night experiment to entertain women who didn't have dates for the evening. And that's how I promoted it. That's how why I created it. And then I went from Friday night to Saturday night and then Sunday night. Then the rest is history. It went from one night a week to seven nights a week. And then it went from Howard University to, in its heyday, 485 stations used my format. And it was specifically created to entertain people who were dateless, who were, you know, single, and wanted companionship and wanted company.
Wow, that's wonderful. I mean, I'm just blown back by the way that you have pioneered certain things, and again, not knowing. And I'm a big talk radio format fan. I just love listening to talk radio. And then to find out that in your initial stages of getting your financing, that I guess you had to overcome that obstacle or that hurdle of being a talk format or music. I think, didn't you have to challenge?
They told me that black people could not talk and that advertisers would not support black talk. But let me tell you, the interesting thing was I had a battle with the advertisers. I had a battle with the lenders. The way I ended up on the air was quite by accident. I ended up having to host the morning show because my lending institutions told me that I was the first 24-hour news talk format from a black perspective in the United States. And my lenders told me, number one, news talk, as you well know, is the most expensive of all the formats. It's a lot cheaper just having a disc jockey there spinning records. When you have a news talk format, you have to have news people. You have to have wire service. You have to have producers. You have to have researchers. And then you have to have hosts. So they said, it's too costly. Go back to doing music. And I refused to go back to 24 hours of music because I had done research on what format was needed and wanted by the Washington, D.C. community. And what they said overwhelmingly was they wanted more news and information about themselves. That they could turn on any station and find out what was going on at the White House or, you know, in Chicago or, you know, Podunk, Idaho. But they couldn't find out what was going on in Southeast D.C., which had the highest percentage of black residents at that time. So I knew that this was a needed format, a needed service in my community. So I started hosting it myself. But initially, those first several years, my biggest battle did not come from advertisers nor my lenders. It came from my audience itself. My audience felt that because some black people may have left an S off, a verb every now, or put one on, that they were embarrassing their entire community. I said, wait a minute. One person cracking a verb does not bring the whole black community down.
Right,
I was like,
right.
My community is not that shallow, and if you
right.
think that it is, then maybe you need to join somebody else's community, okay?
Right, right.
I said, and plus, we'll get the swing of this. We've never been allowed to express ourselves before.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Some people would take too long. I would get petitions from school teachers. I got a petition one day, 300 black school teachers signed and said that my program was anti-intellectual and that I was embarrassing the black community. I said, you all are the embarrassment to the black community that you would be so ignorant to send this type of petition in here and try to stop black people from expressing themselves. And then I had to really get a little heavy-handed with them. And I said, and if these brothers and sisters don't know how to talk correctly on talk radio, it's because you have not been doing your job. You, the teacher.
Right, they failed something.
Right, thank you. So
right.
Is this an apology?
Right.
So anyway, then I read their petition on the air and read off their names. Well, that was the last time anyone ever said that black folks shouldn't be allowed to talk in public because I just literally put a spotlight on them. I'm like, how dare you all be embarrassed by your own people, you know?
Wow. Yes. You know, with my subscribers, and this has been strange to me, not strange in the fact that it cannot happen, but when I first started howtobeablackentrepreneur.com, of course, my initial subscribers were male.
Mm-hmm.
Today, my subscriber base is between 70 to 75% female. So my question to you, if you were to advise someone who is interested in becoming an entrepreneur,
mm-hmm.
but particularly black women,
mm-hmm.
what should be their first steps?
Well, the first step for any entrepreneur is to clearly define what it is that you want to do. Ideas are like noses. All of us have one.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to really quantify and qualify our ideas, because everyone has dreams and aspirations. You have to determine, you have to do research, you have to read, you have to be studied on what it is that you want to do. Unless, and I say this a lot to particularly women entrepreneurs, unless you're already doing it. So many black women are already entrepreneurs and don't realize it. And some of us have been entrepreneurs since we were in junior high school braiding all of our friends' hands, okay? Or, you know, our cooking for some function, or researching a term paper for someone else, or back before the days of computers, typing a term paper for somebody. So many of us already were entrepreneurs and didn't realize it. Babysitting, cleaning somebody else's dorm room in college to make a few dollars, okay? I was like, well, if you're making enough money to pay your tuition in college, cleaning up everybody else's dorm room, have you ever given any consideration to the possibility that maybe you should hire some other people and take over the whole campus?
Right.
Okay, open a company. So you have to clearly define what it is that you want to do and quantify and qualify it and not just allow it to be a dream. Because like I said, dreams are like noses. We all got dreams and ideas on something we could do. The most important aspect of a woman going into business, I think, is really identifying and forming a support group. So often, people who love us feel a need to protect us, and they sometimes overprotect us and make us squeamish and afraid to be adventurous. And you have to be bold and adventurous if you're a woman going into business, because even though more and more and more and more women are going into business, it is still a male-dominated game. So often, in my case, it was my mother. I can't tell you, my mother would cry. She would beg me, please get a government job. You're in Washington, D.C. You're smart. People like you. Give up. You're sleeping on a floor in a sleeping bag, Kathy. People think you've lost your mind. You've had a nervous breakdown. What's wrong with you? Go get a good government job and stop trying to. Well, my mother was not trying to stop me from being a successful entrepreneur. She was worried about me. She was scared for me. I had lost everything to try to hold on to this business, and she was ready for me to throw in the towel out of love and protection. But guess what? It was also so discouraging. So I start lying to my mother when she would call, well, have you turned it around? Oh, yeah, Mama, things are just great. But guess what? In lying to my mother about my business turning around and doing great, I started to believe it myself. And once I started to believe it myself, guess what? It started to happen.
It started to
So I tell women so often, your husbands, your brothers, your sisters, your mother, your daddy, your neighbors, sometimes even your financial advisors and your lawyers are the first to want to protect you. There is still this thing. It's so interesting because black women don't get a lot of help, but we get a lot of protection, allegedly, a lot of advice on what we should be doing, which discourages us, because black women, we're full of passion and emotion. So if someone tells us that we're making a mistake, most of us, unless we just knuckleheads, we stop and analyze it. Well, am I really, you know, acting crazy? Am I really, I am sleeping in a sleeping bag, like my mama said, and cooking on a hot plate. And maybe I am not, you know, really realizing, okay. So you have to put on blinders. You have to be myopic. You have to keep your eye on the prize. You cannot sometimes share with people. You got to lie. When people say, how's it going? They may be getting ready to foreclose your, you know, underwear, on your underwear, but you've got to say, oh, I can't tell you, today was just fabulous, okay?
Best day I've had, right?
Best day I've had since I've been in business. And like I said, you say it enough, the first person that you're going to convince is yourself, because who's hearing it more than anybody else? You.
Right.
And it really, your attitude really does determine your altitude. Your attitude determines your altitude. But with women, like I said, we normally can't get a lot of financial or other help. You know, sometimes you don't need the finance. You just need someone to give you a helping hand. But Lord have mercy, do people give us advice under the guise of, I'm just trying to protect you. I'm just trying to look out for you. Well, if you're trying to look out for me, loan me that $10,000 I need to make payroll.
Right.
Okay?
Exactly.
I don't need you discouraging me, telling me that, you know, it, and then it's funny because people are so, they want to be politically correct. They don't say to mm-hmm. you point blank, you shouldn't be doing this. They're like, well, do you think it's really worth it?
Sure, right.
Do you think that, you know, do you think you maybe you're sacrificing too much? What about you? You know, I mean, what about your own personal life? I'm trying to build a business right now. My business is my personal life.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So I tell women, don't get discouraged and try to find somebody in a comparable situation, if not maybe the same situation, but a comparable situation. People are amazed because entrepreneurs call me frequently, and they're like, you took my call. I'm like, yeah, because I can't tell you how lonely it was for me when no one would take my call.
Right.
And I said, it may have taken me a few weeks, and sometimes if I get backlogged, maybe a couple months. But I've called people back, and they're like, I forgot I called you, Miss Hughes. I just wanted to, you know. I was like, no, I will return your call. You just got to be patient, because sometimes it's just a word of encouragement that we need to get over the hump.
Yes. Wow. That's beautiful. I saw you on the Tavis Smiley State of the Black Union the other
mm-hmm.
day, and I listened and I watched, and just as I just heard you speak now, when I listen to you, when I see you, I hear a woman with passion and drive. Can you expound on your passion and what drives you?
God. I have a firm belief that God has used me as an instrument to be a voice for my people and a vehicle for the uplifting and betterment of my people. I have 2,500 employees. Of that, about 2,200 are of African descent, and of that, about 44% are women. That's not me. That's not a result of anything special about me. That's a classic example of God using an ordinary woman to do extraordinary things for other individuals. My motivation, my passion, my commitment, my determination are all predicated on this deep, deep, deep commitment and desire to leave my community just a little bit better when I close my eyes for the final time than it was when I opened my eyes for the first time. I love my people, I love my community, and I feel that it is an obligation that I have been charged with and a responsibility that I welcome to help as many black folks as I possibly can. I believe in the old adage that a rising tide lifts all boats. So I feel that God has allowed my boat to rise with the tide so that I can bring some other boats up with me.
Wow, that's beautiful. I know you have to go. Just one last question, if you don't mind.
No, go right ahead.
Yes. What trait or characteristic, I mean, because we just talked about your passion and your drive, and in fact, just many traits and characteristics that you have that just flow out of you. But what trait or characteristic do you think a person must have if they are to achieve success as an entrepreneur?
Integrity. Your word must be your bond. Again, if I can just share with you a little bit on the Time Warner Endowed Chair for the Howard University School of Communications. And I tell my class frequently that integrity is your word has to be your bond. You know, the Japanese don't use lawyers. Their word is their bond. And they have a thriving economy based on the fact that you have to be an honorable human being. I tell my class classes that one of the biggest mistakes that entrepreneurs make is they run from their the people they owe money to, their creditors. And when they know that they can't make their payment, we do this so much in our personal life too. So I say to them that what I'm getting ready to share with you will work in your personal life as well as in your business life. When you owe someone something, you have given them your word that you're going to pay them back. So when you're not able to, you owe them an explanation or at bare minimally a notification that you're not going to be able to live up to your word. So I tell them that I use this strategy, and it's why I was never foreclosed on. When I couldn't make my payments, no creditor had to call me because I was calling them saying, listen, Brother Bedford, I am so sorry. I know I owe you $1,000. I don't have your $1,000 next Tuesday when it's due, but I do have $200, and I'm going to send you that $200, and I'm going to make good on that $800 that I owe you as soon as I possibly can. No, I can't tell you exactly when that day is going to be, but I'm going to send you $25, $50, or $100 the next minute I get my hands on it so that I can retire this debt as soon as possible. But I want you to know that I acknowledge that I owe you this $1,000, and Brother Bedford, my word is my bond. You will be paid. And every single solitary of my creditors got some type of payment from me. It was so interesting because oftentimes I would get a letter back saying, hey, your payment is so small that it's not worth us processing it, and obviously you need it more than us. Here's your check back. Okay. I was like, thank you, Lord. It worked. Okay. I needed that check back. Okay. And I tell people, same thing with your personal life. I can't tell you over the years, as you know, as I was growing in my business as well as my personal life, I'd be at one of my friends' houses and the phone would ring and it would be a bill collector. They'd be, tell them I'm not home. Tell them I'm not here. I'm like, no, you need to tell them you are here and that you don't have their money.
Right.
Okay? Makes a big difference. Integrity, I think, is the most important, because if you require that of yourself, the universal order of things, the God-given force that controls the whole universe, keeps the sun up in the sky and keeps the planet Earth from bumping into any other planet. There is a universal God force at work 24/7. And if you're a person of integrity, then that's what will be drawn to you. If you try to be slick and avoid the people that you owe money to or cut corners or not live up to your word, well, guess what? That's what you're going to attract.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, in my opinion, integrity is the most important characteristic to be a successful entrepreneur.
Oh, wow. Ms. Hughes, I can't explain. Words do not describe. This has been a highlight of my career thus far.
Oh, aren't you a kind person? Thank you.
No, I really appreciate it. I mean, I've heard numerous great things about you, but to personally get an opportunity to speak to you and feel your spirit has just done wonders for my soul. So thank you very much.
Thank you. God bless you. And I pray that in the not-too-distant future, you will have 1 million subscribers to your service.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. God bless. And thank you so much for the honor of being included.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to my conversations with Black millionaire entrepreneurs. And if you want more tips, more strategies, more notifications that would really take you into the mindset of these brilliant Black millionaire entrepreneurs, I need you to take out your phone and text my brother, that's the keyword, my brother, to 58885. Just text the keyword, my brother, to 58885. Or if you prefer, you can go online and just go to blackmillionairemindset.com. And once you enter your name and your email, I will immediately send you my video training, 10 Keys to Unlock Your Own Millionaire Mindset. So again, you can go to blackmillionairemindset.com, enter your name and email, and I'll send you the video training, or you can text the keyword, my brother, to 58885, and I'll make sure that you get the video training. This is your brother Bedford, and I look forward to seeing you and hearing from you in the next Conversations with Black Millionaire Entrepreneurs. Take care.